We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, and joining me now is Parth Upadhyay. We have to talk about some Tiger basketball. Never a dull moment. 2 days, back-to-back, commits. Yesterday, massive one in P.J. Haggerty. Today, a decent one at the big position in Dane Danger. But you can find Parth at the Daily Memphian. Also on X at PUpadhyay_. Parth, what's the word, brother? How's it going?
It's going well, man. Enjoying the off season. Obviously, never a dull moment, as you said. So just staying on my toes, as we all are.
Yeah, and here's the thing that I was talking with Jeff yesterday about. Yeah, you have two commits, but you're going to have to like have stories tabbed for, what, 5-6 more easily in the transfer portal? 100%. I mean, the roster more, turnaround is just – it's almost mind-numbing at this point. How much is going to have to be added from last year to this year?
No, it is, because, I mean, at this point, the only eligible scholarship players you can bring back are David Jones, Ashton Hardaway, and who's the – I'm blanking on the last one here.
Jared Harris will be
Nicholas
coming
Jordan,
in.
Oh, Nicholas Jordan, of course, Jordan. Who has told us he'll be back, but we'll see on that one.
Well, Jared Harris has to sign.
And then Jared
still.
Harris
– Or has he signed
already?
He's signed.
So that's four, right? Even then, you're looking at nine guys, but they added – obviously Dane Danger and P.J. Haggerty. So you still got seven spots open, and that's if Nicholas Jordan, you know, sticks to his word and comes back. That's
and if David Jones
if
comes
David
back.
Jones and convince David Jones to come back, and that's if, obviously, they get Ashton Hardaway back as well.
All right, so you're the one who tabbed the story, and you did some great work. I have to give you credit for the podcast
for the Google
notes.
Translate.
You did Google Translate
on
some
I'm sorry,
Spanish.
YouTube Translate.
Yeah, YouTube Translate, whatever it is.
Right.
Great work on the David Jones story you tabbed earlier in the week. How do you feel? Because, like, Penny said 60-40, 70-30, he's going to come back, but obviously he's going to, you know, test the waters in the NBA draft and see what happens. Like, what? 60-40, 70-30 seems overly optimistic.
Crazy high, I think. I was never there, I'll be honest. I know Penny's an optimistic guy. He'll be forever that way, obviously. And I like that. But I don't think I was ever at 60 or 70%. I always thought it was a coin flip. But, you know, after hearing, or reading, rather, the interview he did in the Dominican Republic, like, that's got to make you feel a little bit better, right, if you're a Tigers fan? I mean, he... you know, is still very much considering both options. He even said that if, you know, he pretty much said that if he doesn't get the feedback that he wants in terms of making a certain amount of money in the NBA, then he'll look to come back because of the resources at Memphis and because of the, you know, he didn't say it, but the NIL check that he'll be inevitably getting at Memphis. So, you know, if you're a Tigers fan, you're looking at mock drafts and you're not seeing the name David Jones, whether that's fair or not.
You're seeing him as an undrafted free agent.
You're seeing him as an undrafted free agent and, you know, you could make more money at Memphis.
Yeah, but here's the thing about him making money, and you could probably shed a little bit more light.
Sure.
He has to make that money not in the United States of America because he's over here on a student visa, and he's a foreigner, so you cannot make that money here. So he'd have to be elsewhere to go make that money, and that just sort of feels like some backdoor moves and everything else to go make that happen and facilitate that, right?
No, 1,000%. Obviously, last year they had the foreign trip in the DR where they were able to pay him there, but... you know, this year you don't have that. You know, you're going to Maui, which is a, you know, Hawaii, U.S. state, obviously not a foreign country there. But, you know, you've got to think, a guy like David Jones, if Memphis really wants him to come back, and if David Jones really wants to come back.
They'll find a way.
They'll figure something out, I'm sure.
Yeah. And how do you feel, how do you feel sort of just looking, we'll start with P.J. Haggerty.
Sure.
How do you feel about that addition? I think most people are excited about it. When I did my sort of transfer portal wish list on my podcast and here, I said that guy's at the top of the list. I think On3 has him as the third-ranked transfer portal recruit second at this point. He keeps moving around because he started
they
like
do
eight,
move them often, yes.
And then he went to three, and now he's at two.
Yeah.
And then I saw him, CBS Sports, our guy David Cobb, he moved him from 47th to 17th because he said he's got 3 years of eligibility. That
jump.
Definitely helps. What really strikes me about this one is, yeah, 3 years of eligibility, that's fun. 21 points per game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists per game as a freshman, that's fun. But I think it's great that Penny got this big fish out of the way first, right? And I think when you're trying to build a team, you need to know what the pecking order is going to be. That guy seemingly would be at the top, even if David Jones, like even if in the case if David Jones does not come back. Now you can just build around it. And I think having that done right now is pretty massive.
No, 100%. I mean, even last year, obviously Nicholas Jourdain panned out really well. But that was the first get, right? Last year was Nicholas Jourdain.
Yeah.
It was Jalen Young. It was Jonathan Pierre. Obviously, they got Caleb Mills in there as well. But Caleb Mills was, I don't think, ever going to be, you know, your 1A. Right?
Yeah.
Or your 1B for that matter. Now you've got a guy that could be your second best player, right? If you can get David Jones back or if you can get somebody – you know, even bigger to be that 1A, I think P.J. Haggerty can easily be, you know, first, second, if not at least third best player on the team. Man, the dude's 6'3", plays both ends of the floor. I'm not going to act like I've seen a ton of Tulsa games, but...
We saw him play against Memphis. He was damn good.
Man, I saw it in person, and the dude's like, he's got a motor, man. He's engaged. He's not taking plays off, and anytime I turned on Tulsa on the television, like, that dude was locked in.
Yes.
And like we said, you know, plays both ends of the floor, and... You know, look at the scoring, 15th in the country, and that's without a 3-point shot.
Yeah.
If he can develop that jumper, man, like things could get really scary here.
It's kind of funny though. Like you go game to game with him and his 3-point shot. By the end of the year, there were some decent spike games with his 3-point ball.
It was very up and down. It was either like
he shot 29%, but I look at his 29%, and I saw him play a few times this year. And weirdly enough, I don't think that tells the whole story about what his 3-point shot could actually be and what his game on the offensive side could actually be. We know he can get to the mid-range. We know he can get to the cup. I think that 3-point shot actually had – there's something there. There's something there as opposed to what the stats tell you.
No, I think there is too. And, you know, you look at Tulsa, obviously, you don't have a large variety of weapons, so teams are loading up on PJ.
Yeah,
you know, common sense tells me it's going to make it harder to get your shots up. Whereas Memphis, you know, you're building a team here. I think you're going to have better floor spacing. You're going to have better weapons around him. And that should open him up for having more of those games that we saw him have towards the end of the season.
But it does kind of remind me of, remember, Kendrick Davis was really early in the calendar in the transfer portal. It kind of reminds me of that from the conference. Obviously, he's got more time, but a point guard early, 21 point per game score, bam, you got that out of the way.
Yes.
Now let's go build around him however we can. And they had Dane Danger today commit. And listen, I think based on his career, I have some interesting, you know, feelings about his fit. 6'9", 270 for most of his career, and he's an interior scorer. And we saw that with Jordan Brown this year. If you're a little overweight and you're just an interior scorer, Penny has not shown the tendency to be deliberate to get those guys the ball and get them into their best sort of, you know, role, if you will. But it looks like he's losing a little bit of weight, and maybe he'll run the floor a little bit better. But I think in the end of the day, if he was a reserve big, if he's a guy that you
that's
can count on for 15
big.
To 20
yes.
minutes, that's exactly what you want from him.
No doubt. And I think something else that doesn't get mentioned often is the idea that I'm sure Penny and Rick Stansbury are thinking, you know, 2 years ago, this guy played a sizable role. He was a starter, a regular starter on that Illinois team from 2022, 2023, averaged nearly 10 points a game, you know, nearly 6 rebounds, more than a block a game. If he can, get back to that level in a much watered-down league than the Big Ten, as
right,
we know.
Right, true.
Like, that could get scary. Like, it could be really, really good for the Tigers.
But what's obvious about the difference between him playing that big role 2 years ago and this year is they took him out, put Coleman Hawkins in, spread out the floor, and their offense was substantially better. And I think that was sort of the main switch they made this offseason.
Yep. And if you watch Illinois, once again, didn't watch a ton of them either, but in the postseason, certainly in the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament, that's a team that gets up and down, right? What does Memphis do? The same thing. They turn defense to offense. They like to run. And I think that more than anything else is why Dane Danger saw a reduced role, saw his minutes go from 20-something to 10.8 last season because of that change of style. You know, can he get in a little bit better shape? Can he kind of mold his game? And can Memphis mold what they do to fit him? Can those two parties kind of meet halfway? to get the best of each other, and I think that's what we're waiting to see.
And here's what's nice. Here's what's nice, and you can confirm this for me. I've seen this out there.
Sure.
Two seasons left of eligibility for him because, from what I understand, he only dressed out for 3 games at Baylor before he went to Illinois. So you have to have log 30% of your games to have a year count against your eligibility. So he would have Correct. 2 more years left.
Yeah, I thought it was 1, and I think I actually mistyped it in my article, so I apologize for whoever read that there. But, yeah, he does have 2 years left because of the 3 games he played at Baylor. That was it. Redshirted that first year, as we know. Played 3 games second year before transferring, or at least declaring his intent to transfer, November of 2021. And then played 2 full seasons at Illinois, which gives him, as we just did the math, 2 more seasons at Memphis. So I think that's good, too. You got P.J. Haggerty coming in with 3 years left. You got Dane
Right.
Danger with 2 years left. You've got guys that, you know, aren't in that kind of mentality of, hey, it's my last year. I got to get the most NIL. I got to get the most shots.
Right.
I got to get the most this. These guys, you know, from what we can tell, seem like they want to, you know, still.
They know they have more eligibility.
They still have more left in the tank, and they have more eligibility left to get there.
Yes, and that was one of the big things earlier this week before any of these commitments. Carl Scherenfein gets in the portal. And, like, as a player, I think he does fit Penny's style. He's a defensive guy, works his ass off a little bit on the offensive end. He had some things that he could develop on that end, and we saw a few of those things this year. But him getting in the portal, it just sort of highlighted the fact that, yeah, I know it's hard to keep guys around and keep them in your program for 2, 3, 4 years these days. I get it. But that's something Penny has really struggled with. And that's how you build a program. You need pillars and you need
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Annuity, and Penny has not had that. And having a guy like Carl Scherenfein get in the portal, it just continues down that road of no continuity year to year.
No, it's tough because, you know, as we know, the season ended and you already had 6 guys that were definitely gone. You know, Javon Quinterly, Naquan Tomlin, Caleb Mills, Jaquan Walton, Jordan Brown, and then your 2 Memphis guys, Malcolm Dandridge and Jaden Hardaway. And these hits have, like you mentioned, you know, kind of kept on coming. You know,
right.
Whether it be Jonathan Pierre, who, you know, couldn't wait to get out of there, apparently. Jalen Young, you know, enters the portal. You got Carl Scherenfein now. So that's 9 guys gone. Yeah, I mean, we've seen this happen for, what, 2 seasons now, 2 off seasons in a row where they're looking to build an entirely new team. It's just not sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, that's not how you build a culture. That's not how you get guys to buy into what you want, what you want to do and what you want to build here at Memphis. But, you know, I think Penny and Rick are attacking the portal in a very smart way. They're getting guys that, you know, are going to be here more than a year.
Not just mercenaries for 1 year.
Not just mercenaries, right? And if you got to go in the portal, I think this is the best way to do it versus getting, like we saw last year, these big flashy names who are looking for one last hurrah. And it just didn't work out.
Yeah, and the way we've seen this work is I think you can draw some similarities between Kendrick Davis and P.J. Haggerty. Obviously, they're different as players.
Different styles of play.
Different styles of play, but still dogs. Like, every
single
game, you're going to see them come out. They can score at a high level. But 2 years ago, you sort of saw this blueprint of, let's find our best guy. Let's find our 1A. And then from there, fill it in with guys that aren't the shiny objects. Guys that just fit the program. Keontae Kennedy, DeMario Franklin, Elijah McCadden, who are just going to work their ass off on the defensive end. That seems like this offseason, maybe he's trying to mold it more that direction. We'll see. We'll see, though.
I mean, it definitely seems like it. I mean, you look at the guys that Memphis has been kind of connected with, you know, with these portal guys, they haven't been these kind of headlining names
right.
that make you go ooh and ah. They've been some of these AAC guys, whether it be Aaron Scott or, you know, whoever it may be, you know, even Dane Danger coming from a Big Ten program that just won the Big Ten tournament title, sure, but, you know, he was a role player. So I think that's encouraging. I know some fans have been on Twitter talking about, you know, why are we building an AAC All-Star team?
Well.
You know, have we lowered our standards? Like, did nobody learn anything
right.
from what we just saw a season ago?
Right.
Like, you know, you got Javon Quinterly and Jordan Brown and Jaquan Walton and all
you're getting
these
mercenaries from the ACC and the Big East and all these guys.
Right.
That didn't work.
And what happened?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it imploded. So I think.
And also, I think there's something to be said about guys that know the AAC after a pretty abysmal AAC slate this year. Not good. That's where they lost their season.
1,000%. I mean, they didn't lose it in the non-conference
right.
where they steamrolled through Virginia, Clemson, and Texas A&M.
Right.
They certainly didn't do it there. So I mean, yeah, for sure. Someone like PJ Haggerty, who's dominated the league as a freaking redshirt freshman, you know, and only it can only be up from here, right, for him and his game. So you're bringing him in. Dane Danger, you know, if he can, you know, either A, play a role, or B, get in shape in order to play a, you know, headlining role, up and down style of basketball. Yeah, that's great. I just think it's more encouraging to see that they're being very specific, right? They're targeting guys who fit the scheme, who fit the culture, versus just getting whoever the biggest and flashiest talent may be out there.
Yep, and PJ Haggerty is big and flashy, but
exactly.
I think again,
at the best of both worlds.
But he definitely fits. But it's like Kendrick Davis was a couple of years ago. Now I hate to rewind this way, but talking with Parth Upadhyay, he is the Daily Memphian beat reporter for the Tiger basketball program. I want to rewind to the Jonathan Pierre story. Right, that was strange to hear some of the things that he said on record. Right, like he came out and he told you. I mean,
it was strange. Yes,
yeah, he's talking about a cancerous locker room and everything else, and that's why he had to find different greener pastures. It was enlightening. I would imagine it was enlightening while you were reporting and talking to him for the story.
Yeah, I mean that Sunday, obviously he goes to I think Joe Tipton it was, and you know puts it out there that he wants to transfer in the. The portal's not even open, man. The portal was opening the next day.
Yeah.
So I was like, damn, man, this dude, couldn't wait. And, you know, and I'm not blaming him for that. You know, it wasn't
do
a good
fit. Do what you need to do.
Do what you need to do. It wasn't a great fit. And he's obviously someone with a lot of promise that I think could, thrive elsewhere, whether it be a lower level or even somewhere on the same level. That kind of more fits his needs and style and whatever it may be. But yeah, he kind of said the quiet part out loud in a way, right? Like the part that we already knew.
Assumed.
Not even assumed. Penny said
right.
Before games. Like, Penny has said these things. So, some people were shocked, right? Like, oh, how could he say that? Or what does that mean? Like, these are the same things that the freaking, the head coach and other players in the program were describing. And it's not the end of the world. It's just the reality of what the situation was. And even Jonathan Pierre, after he said all that, He made sure to emphasize, like, I'm really grateful for Penny Hardaway. I'm really grateful for Rick Stansberry and everybody who's, who brought me here and kind of helped with my development. He was very clear about that, but it just, the pieces didn't gel and it caused a tumultuous locker room. I don't think that was a surprise to anybody.
Yeah, and it was just, the thing that struck me is it's an escape from who we thought, like, Jonathan Pierre was in a way. Like, Jonathan Pierre, good head on his shoulders. When he came in, he's just like, I want to work my ass off. Don't really care about playing time at this particular moment.
Yep.
Hopefully that comes along. And then afterwards, he was being very to the point about what he thought this year and where he thought this year went wrong. So it was definitely an escape. Now, transitioning to some other targets, who are we looking at here? So you said Aaron Scott, a guy from North Texas. Who else? Who else is out there that you're hearing the Tigers attached to?
Well, let me start by saying this. It's been quiet in terms of, like, in terms of social media attention and national guys reporting.
Well, and it's also
stuff.
Hard
it's deliberate.
I always laugh at this. It's always hard to really sort through because the portal report will come out and have 75 names attached to a guy's, and it's like, do I really want to scroll through all these?
Memphis is not among those names anymore. Like,
yeah,
whereas Memphis and Arkansas were staples last year. Every single guy, worth a damn who entered the portal. You're not seeing that this year. You're seeing a more selective approach, and you're seeing a more quiet approach. I mean, PJ Haggerty was on campus, Sunday and Monday. I spoke to his father earlier, and he
didn't even know.
Nobody knew.
Right.
At least publicly, nobody knew, right? We thought, many people thought Dane Danger was the first person on campus. They've had a couple.
Yeah.
couple come through here. It just hasn't been publicly reported, but I think Aaron Scott, we've talked about him as a great fit, 6'7", wing, can shoot the three.
A lot of defense.
Kind of fits the mold, right? Fits the mold of what Penny wants in terms of an up-and-down style of play. But I think that guys like that should be, high on the wish list of both Penny Hardaway and Memphis fans, I think.
All right, now let's move on to the Final Four. I know you're a North Carolina guy, but North Carolina State, and like how do we feel about this? I know they beat Duke, so you're probably happy about that, right? Like you're okay with that. But like they are America's team. Are they Parth Upadhyay's team?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Man, it's hard not to get on board. I mean, like the way they play,
DJ Burns,
you know,
man.
The first time since 1983, they're having this magical run. Like, it's hard not to be a fan of that, just as a fan of the sport of college basketball. I think I've told you this, but I don't know if the listeners know. I started my college career, if you will, at NC State.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
So that's where I went to school first. I'm from Raleigh, so NC State was about 15, 20 minutes the campus was from my parents' home. I thought I wanted to do an engineer, you know, to do engineering.
Yeah.
Mechanical or civil engineer, and NC State, you know, was a great fit for that, but very quickly.
I realized that
was not, you know, the move for me, and kind of started sports writing at the end of my freshman year that summer, and you know, the rest is history, as they say. It kind of, you know, went from there, and that's when I transferred to North Carolina as a junior and did, you know, 3 years there. So I grew up a diehard North Carolina fan, Tar Heels fan.
Yeah.
Got to attend my dream school, but there is some love, you know,
for the ACC at large and for NC State. I know it's in-state rivalry, and it can get, like, back and forth, but obviously it's Duke, North Carolina, and NC State may be sort of on the back burner of that.
Yeah, I mean, Duke, North Carolina is, like, the national
rivalry. Of course.
I think it's the best rivalry in college sports. You know, we can
debate North Carolina and North Carolina State.
But I think, see, Carolina fans will tell you it's not a rivalry. I'm here to tell you it is.
Yeah.
Like, if you're always screaming, not our rival, little brother, like, it's a rivalry.
Yeah, if you have to get asked the question, all this stuff,
exactly,
it is.
Exactly. I mean, they haven't had the success. NC State hasn't, you know, compared to North Carolina. So head-to-head, it's very lopsided. But, you know, in terms of animosity between fan bases, in terms of, you know, it's such a tight area right there. The triangle between Durham, Raleigh, and Chapel Hill. Like, you got NC State, Duke, North Carolina, all right there in that little triangle region that, you know, you're working with. You may be a Carolina alum, you're working with a Duke alum or NC State alum, or, you know, you're going to school with a kid who's a diehard State fan. So there's always going to be that chirping back and forth, and I think that's what makes it a rivalry.
Yeah, but it does feel like we're headed into a relatively chalky, boring Final Four, right?
I think we're headed towards two blowouts, man, and I hate
But I'll say I this, the national championship game, I think, could be phenomenal if we get there, because the Zach Edey and Klingon, those behemoths battling, that's what I want to see. Like, that's when we look at the potential matchups, that's the one that I really highlight and say that I need that.
I mean, pretty much all season, ever since, I want to say, like, December or January, when things kind of settled down, you know, there were three teams that were a tier above everybody else in college basketball. And who were those three teams? UConn, Purdue, and Houston, right?
Yep.
Now we've got two of them still alive and well, seemingly headed for a, you know, collision course in the national title game on Monday. So I think that's going to be awesome. In a perfect world, if I had it my way, I want to see some upsets. I want to see NC State, beat Purdue, right? And I want to see the UConn machine that we've seen go down against Alabama. I just don't think it's going to happen, man.
I just don't see it.
I don't see it.
UConn is just one of those teams that comes, I mean, especially the last 2 years, one of those teams that comes along every once in a decade, in my opinion, where it's like, no matter what style of basketball, and I keep saying this, whatever style of basketball you want to play, if you want to get up and down the floor, if you want to shoot threes, you want to be super offensive, you want to play the half-court game and play defense, they'll beat you at whatever game you bring at them. Because I think it comes down to coaching. They have some good experience mixed with some really good young guys. They just have the formula right now.
I mean, it's scary. I think if they can finish this off, like, there will be documentaries, right?
Like, right,
made about these past two seasons. It's going to be the first back-to-back champion since Florida.
Yes.
06-07. This is rare, right? Like, after that Florida back-to-back run, no champion has even made it to the Final Four again.
Right.
So this is already historic, and if they can finish this off, it's going to be one of the best runs in college basketball history.
As opposed to a lot of schools, they use the approach of, let's give him his time. We believe in this guy. Let's give him his time. And it's led them to this point. Because the first few years at UConn were not easy for him. They were rough. They were rough when he was in the AAC still. But they took their time, used patience, and got to where they needed to go.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's surprising, right? Like, a fan base like UConn, a place like that with so much history, tradition, all of the above, you know, sitting through, I'm looking at it now, a 16-17 season, a 19-12 season.
Right.
Yeah, 19-12 season. In the COVID year, 2021, 15-8. So not great there either. But they toughed out those first three, four years and look at them now. And, you know, in year five last year, won a championship, and in year six, looking like he's going to do it again. So,
yep.
I guess good on them.
Well, we'll see how it plays out. But yeah. Parth, appreciate you joining. You have a good weekend, and we will talk soon.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. He is Parth Upadhyay from the Daily Memphian, covering Tigers basketball. He is on X at PUpadhyay_. On that note, it's about time to get out of here. Enjoy the men's Final Four, the women's Final Four tonight. We got to pass you off to Grizzlies versus Pistons. Jessica Benson is next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.